Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Om, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of a Shabbat teaching by Rabbi Rebecca Schatz.
I opened up Achrei Mot, which is this coming week's Parsha post-Pesach, and I was struck by the Or HaChaim's commentary and how very intense he seems to get on this one verse and really just on one aspect of the first verse. So I decided, okay, why not? Like, let's just dive deeply into his commentary. Let's see what he has to say. And as I said before, there's pages and pages of his commentary. I just took a few of the excerpts, and you'll see it's a four-page source sheet. So it's longer than it normally is. We're not going to get to everything, but there's much more where this comes from. So if you're interested, you can go on Safaria and see even more of what he says. But this is a snippet that I thought was most relevant and interesting. He goes on a few tangents. I didn't insert all those tangents into the space here. So we're going to look at this first. It's the first line. Marshall just read it a few minutes ago. The first line of Parshat Achrei Mot. And it says, "Vayedaber Adonai Moshe Achrei Mot Shnei Bnei Aharon." So God said to Moses, after the death of the two sons of Aaron. So remember that the sons of Aaron die, and then we have two parshiot, Tazria and Metzora, in between, and we hear all about skin disease and all those fun things. And then the Torah brings us back and says, "Oh, wait a second. Let's get back into the story of Aaron's two sons who died." Bekorvatam lifnei Adonai vayamutu. In their closeness to before God, and they died. So the two sons of Aaron died, and it seems to be saying after the et nachta, right? So after the trope comma, so to speak, in their closeness to God, they then died. So without even getting into the Or HaChaim, you can imagine that there are multiple questions here. First of all, why are you reminding us of this now? Like, we know they died. Why is this coming up again? Another question is, it says they died. Why are you telling us twice in one sentence that they died, right? We know that. It says they died, and then you said again that they died. And the question that I've always had is, why would the closeness to God be the thing that kills them? Right? Isn't the idea of being close to God? Rabbi Klickfeld gave a beautiful, I have never heard someone talk about Shira Shirin the way he did this morning, seemingly extemporaneously, about Shir HaShirim and how we actually want to get close to God, that's what Shir HaShirim is all about. If we take it out of the context of a couple or two lovers, and we take it into the context of God and the people, that's exactly what we're yearning for. We're yearning for closeness, and yet Aaron's children die because of it. Okay, so those are kind of the standout questions that if we were the Or HaChaim, I'm sure we could also come up with our own commentaries on. So we're going to dive into the Or HaChaim, and you're going to see that he has lots of questions. He has five. I even copied this in color so that you could see that I highlighted the different questions that he had. It's in color, right? Yeah, okay. That he has five questions, and I've highlighted them. We might not get to all of them today, but we'll see what we can do. Okay, so the Or HaChaim says, first, why doesn't the Torah spell out what God told Moshe on this occasion? Right, it says that God spoke to Moses, but then it actually doesn't, this happens a lot in the Torah, it doesn't actually say what God said to Moses. It just says God then spoke to Moses, and seemingly it was either about their death or the fact that they died. Okay. Secondly, why did the Torah have to add that this communication occurred after the death of two of Aaron's sons? What bearing does that have on the content of God's message? Right. Why do we need to know that God approached Moshe after Aaron's sons, his nephews, died? Why couldn't the Torah just open up and say God spoke to Moshe? Right. Why go back to Parshiot to remind us that this is the moment that God is now speaking to Moshe? Thirdly, why did the Torah have to add the words "Bekorvotam lifnei Adonai vayamutu"? In their closeness to the presence of God, they then died. If the Torah wanted to tell us the reason these sons died, we've already been told this. Right? In chapter 10 of Leviticus, we were told that they died because of an Esh Zara. So why now are you telling us that they died because of the closeness to God? And even if the even if God is defining those two things as the same, why use different words? Right? We've already been told why need to tell us in a different way. Fourthly, oh, the purple did not come out as well. Sorry. Fourthly, at the end of thirdly, it comes up with this question that is, this is one of the things that I said a few minutes ago. What is so terrible about wanting to come close to the presence of God, right? why is that something that would have killed them? Fourthly, the word vayamutu, they died, is quite superfluous, seeing the verse commenced with the mention of their deaths, right? At the beginning, it says they died. Now we're saying they died again. Fifthly, why did the Torah use the additional letter vav in the word vayamutu? Okay. So those are the Ora Chaim's five questions on, I don't know, 12 words or however many words are here, right? He has a lot to say. So we're going to go straight into this. I didn't give you the Hebrew because it was an 8-page source sheet, but there is Hebrew. And if you're interested in it, go onto Safari and find it. I didn't want you to have too much paper in your hands. Okay. It appears that the Torah tries to tell us that God warned Moshe not to think that seeing that he was personally was closer to the kingdom of heaven and at home in God's palace that he could enter the sanctuary at will. Okay, so this is answering this question of why in this moment was Moshe told in kind of context of Aaron's children's death. And you'll see why in a second. Even though God addressed this command to Aaron, Moshe was not to think that he was not included in this restriction because the Torah itself testifies that Moshe's prophecy was superior to that of Aaron. God had to speak to Moshe to warn him not to misunderstand the prohibition God was about to issue to Aaron concerning entry into the sanctuary, i.e. the Holy of Holies, right? So here we are to understand that if God were to tell Moshe whatever he's telling them in the context of their death, that just like we do with a child, right? Remember when you touched the stove and it was really hot? Well, now while I'm cooking pasta 3 months later, make sure to not put your hand on the stove, right? We bring back a memory to teach a lesson so that people can associate with what the lesson might be based off of prior experience. So that's what the Ora Chaim seems to think is happening here in terms of context. God said, "Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe." The directive was addressed exclusively to Moshe. God spoke to him shortly after the death of these sons of Aaron, who had attempted to come too close as a result of which they died. The Torah meant that although they were the sons of Aaron, meaning that Aaron seemed to have this access that therefore his sons should have, highly placed personages, so much so that the Torah testified that their death was due to their closeness to God. God did not have pity on them in spite of their closeness. Right, so all the more so, right, rabbis do this all the time in their speaking. He's not spelling it out for us, but what the Ora Chaim is basically trying to say is, if they were close to God and they died because of their closeness, you, Moshe, who are one step away from that closeness to God, all the more so you would die if you got that close. Okay, so that seems to be the reason why we're talking about this around the event of their death. Now, this line I thought was quite important in this passage. The principal lesson to be derived from all this is that he who occupies a privileged position is not entitled to take liberties with God, who has granted this privilege in the first place. So, what is that saying as an answer, or like a chetzi answer, somewhat of an answer to this question here? What's the nafka mina coming out here? What's the general understanding coming out, especially from that last line here, as to why does Moshe need to be reminded of this? Or why is it important for us to know? I think it's a general rule. Mark, do we just... No one's above the law. Exactly. And not only that no one's above the law, but you have to follow the law with caution, right? If you shouldn't think that you're above the law and run the red light, but you also shouldn't speed up when it turns yellow because you know that as soon as it turns red, you're not supposed to go, right? You should still be, even though everyone in Los Angeles seems to think that yellow is still green. But the idea here is that there is a standard. And not only should you not go over that threshold, But you shouldn't even try to get close to whatever that boundary is. So not only should Aaron's sons have been, well, Aaron should have been held accountable for his son's actions, but all the more so now Moshe should learn from those actions and be held accountable if he thinks he can override these rules and regulations. Any other thoughts here? I know we're going through this much faster than I normally would, but yeah, Paula. Yes, totally. Totally. Great, great. So so Paula's talking about a rule that we hear mostly when we're talking about things like kashrut or Shabbat or laws that have specific boundaries to them, but we take it one step further and we put there's a phrase in Hebrew that says we put a fence around the law, right? We actually surround the law in something with even more boundary so that you can't even cross into it by accident, right? It's why in just a few minutes, well, actually not in a few minutes, a few minutes ago, we could have been done with Shabbat, right? That the sun set, but we actually need to wait until it's pitch black and there are stars because we don't want to, by accident, end Shabbat too early, right? Or Paula gave the example of carrying money. The carrying of the money is not such a big deal, except for that we've created this boundary such that if you carry money, you might then be tempted to actually use that money, which could lead to mixed dancing, right? Yeah, Hannah. We don't actually know. It's a really good question. When it first comes up that they died, lots of the rabbis talk about how old they might have been and wasn't an appropriate punishment for them. Should the punishment have really been Aaron's as the parent? It's a great question. Like we assume that they were old enough to know what they were doing in terms of the approach of the space that they were entering into. I have no way of knowing, but we don't think they were babies, but we also don't think that they were grown adults. More enthusiastic in what way? Totally. So they were even more enthusiastic. That's what we're going to see in a second, is that they seemed, I mean, that goes back to Mark's point about, like, you can't be above the law, right? That they seem to think that because they had this closeness, they had this attachment, that they had privileges that they actually don't have. There's still rules, right? I feel very close to people who seem very far away to other people based off of experiences I've had with them. And that doesn't mean that I can abuse that right to feel a closeness to someone who needs to be seen in a certain light or have certain boundaries around their livelihood to keep themselves at a distance. Oh, so that's a difference. That's back when we were told that they were killed by an Esh Zara. Now we're dealing with something different, which is that they really had this closeness that brought them in, which killed them. There might be commentaries on that. I just don't have them in front of me, so I don't know. But yeah, they might have just understood differently what it meant to. I have a very good example. I'll try to make this generic. A family member of mine is connected to a famous actress, and therefore that famous actress is someone who I've known for a very long time and know in a very different context than other people on the street when they're around her. And yet, I don't, just because I have this person's cell phone number, for example, doesn't mean that any time that I need to spruce up a program at Temple Beth Am or, you know, want something to happen that might drum up some attention, that I'm gonna text that person, that would be an abuse of that relationship, right? So I know that God's not a famous actress, but the idea here being that if you have a closeness to somebody that there should still be boundaries around, that you shouldn't step over those boundaries like his sons did in bringing whatever incense they brought or in feeling too close to then overstep. Yeah, they were killed. Okay, so let's go to the next piece here. Another aspect of the word bekorvatam may be that these people were closer to God than anyone, right? We've kind of already established that they at least think that. Had Moshe been closer to God than Nadav and Avihu, God should have demonstrated the lesson of bekorvei akadot, akadesh, I think. Bekrovai? Oh, okay. By punishing Moses for some minor infraction he was guilty of. If God chose Nadav and Avihu instead to demonstrate this principle, they must have been the people closest to God at that time. So this is one of these theological principles that I'm not always super excited to think about too deeply, because basically what is being said here is that because God felt so close to them, the punishment could be that dire, right? The punishment could be extreme, because if God felt that close, well, God is an extreme entity, and therefore the punishment could be extreme. But if Moshe had, well, it actually doesn't even say this, but I guess I'm claiming, if Moshe had done something similar to this, then Moshe would have been the one who was punished. Perhaps God explained all of this to Moshe on the occasion so that afterwards Moshe said to Aaron, "This is what God has said to say. I will be sanctified by those who are close to me." Oh, sorry. That's where it came from. Thanks, Stevie. We would then have to assume that the content of God's communication in this verse that we're looking at was said to Moshe immediately after the death of Nadav and Avihu. The fact that their deaths had been reported earlier does not matter, as we have a principle that the Torah is not bound to report events in chronological order. So what they're saying here is that based off of something that came earlier in the Torah, that what we're actually hearing now potentially explains that which came earlier, and then he's just reminding us that there's nothing early or late in the Torah. It's just all stuff that we should learn. And that there is something to learn here based off of those who I feel sanctified to or feel sanctified by me are therefore going to feel close to me. I'm just going to keep going, though feel free to make a comment in just a second. I'm going to just keep going and then pause, and if people have questions, you can ask them, or we're not going to go through the rest of this completely. I'm going to go to the line that I underlined here in the next section. The death of Aaron's sons was due to their having entered the sanctuary on the way to the Holy of Holies without permission. So there was some kind of rule that they broke. Right. However, they had access to the Holy of Holies, right? Which you already need to have a certain type of closeness to have that access. So they had access, but they still had rules, to go back to this idea of like, there's always going to be a boundary. While it is true that in Parshat Shmini, the reason for their deaths given is this strange fire, our verse teaches that they would have been guilty of death for merely entering the Holy of Holies, even if they had not brought the strange fire into the sanctuary. The Torah stressed the word vayamutu, they died, so that we should not think that Nadav and Avihu succeeded to carry out their intention to enter the Holy of Holies. They died before they could carry out their intention. So this is bringing a whole other dimension to this, which is maybe there was some kind of strange fire, but the Or HaChaim believes that it wasn't even necessarily put to use yet, but rather that intentionality of doing something that they were not supposed to do, God knowing that and then punishing them for that. That's, to me, even more disturbing, right? That there was an inclination in their minds that they might do something, not even an action that was yet performed, and yet they had such, some would say, the worst of all punishments. Their lives were ended. The Torah is at pains to let us know this in the event a person would be willing to enter the Holy of Holies, even at the cost of their life. So now this kind of smooths it out a little bit, right? That like you might be willing to do something that is so important to you, even if it might cost you your life. Right, because you feel close enough to that experience, you feel close enough to whatever kind of opportunity that is given to you. There were people who left anywhere, but America specifically are the people that I know, to go fight on October 8th in Israel, not knowing what was going to happen to them because they felt strongly. Right, so it seems what the Or HaChaim believes here is that it wasn't just that there was an intention, it was that there was knowledge that there could be punishment, and they still wanted to enter in. We are warned here that the effort would be futile, as God would not allow such a person to realize their intention. The Torah does not warn us about this because it presumes a criminal intent by someone who insists on entering the Holy of Holies. So the Or HaChaim is still kind of digging at the sons a little bit by saying, if they wanted to enter, they had what?
Like a premeditated
lesson. Exactly. Right. They had a premeditated reason, or they had a, what's the word I'm looking for? They had a preconceived notion as to what was going to happen, and they didn't care. And the Or HaChaim seems to think that it was not a good one. They weren't entering for the right reasons. I can't think of the eloquent term for that right this second, but it'll come to me. On the contrary, the assumption is that such an attempt would be prompted by the religious fervor of the individual. Now, this I actually think is something that we see all the time. And again, if we had more time, I would ask for examples around this. We see this all the time in any kind of extremism, in any religion. We see people doing things in the name of that religion. Again, I'm not singling out any religion. It happens in ours as well. Doing something to an extreme because they think that religious experience is going to kind of cloud any type of punishment that might come for the extremism that they're putting out into the world, or for the action that they are taking in the name of that religion, right? It seems that the Or HaChaim thought that they were doing that they were, in the name of their religiosity or their spiritual closeness or whatever it was, they were doing something that they knew there might be a punishment for. Maybe they believed there wouldn't because they were too close to God, who knows? But they were doing something in the name of their religion that could have a terrible outcome, and did. Yeah, I don't know if it's a midrash or a commentary, but yes. Yeah. Right, that they might have some kind of illicit behavior that led them to make this mistake, I guess you could call it, to take this action in a way that was not their full ideal selves, but rather... There are far too many lawyers in this room to say that never happens, but yeah, I mean, you would want to believe in a world in which that wasn't the case, and I think there's often times where very large mistakes, you know, are made that change people's lives forever based off of drugs or alcohol or things that they're on, and you know, depending on where they live, they get really harsh punishments. Okay, we're going to read the last one here. I know we're skipping like 2.5 pages, but I also don't want to keep you until 10 p.m. Okay. So I want to read the last one on page 4 here. I also think the one right before is very interesting, but this last one I think is a beautiful way of kind of just rounding it all out. Another approach to the word vayamutu focuses on the nature of these sons' deaths rather than on the fact of their deaths. The Torah writes, Bekorvatam lifnei Hashem, to describe that due to their love for God, these people came too near to the celestial source of light, which has a deadly effect on people. This is the mystical dimension of what is commonly known as as death by divine kiss, the kind of death experienced by both Aaron and Moshe eventually. The deaths of Nadav and Avihu were similar to the death of all other completely righteous people. The only difference was that in the case of the deaths of people such as Moshe and Aaron, God's kiss of death approaches them, whereas in this case, Nadav and Avihu approach the kiss of death. It's a really, and the Or HaChaim goes on and on. I just chose to end it here. But he didn't. This is a really beautiful way of, even if they were crazy to think that they could get away with something, that they were seeking closeness to God. They were seeking closeness to a relationship that they felt either far from or felt like there was an element of closeness that they could grow even closer to. And I just love that the Or HaChaim puts it into perspective in the way in which Aaron and Moshe also die, because it's as if they were still seen as these powerful and important human beings that were in relationship with God even at their death, right? It might not have been the same kind of death, and it might not have been the way in which, or for reasons that we agree with, But the fact that God was there and present with two people who clearly wanted to be closer to God, there's something very sweet about that. It's kind of like in Les Mis, where she's dying and the person she wants to love stays with her, even though he doesn't love her, right? Like, there's something kind of weird, but also really beautiful about the fact that God is the one that kills them, but the Or HaChaim at least believes that it's in the same way that God was with those who he loves, who God loves, excuse me, in their final moments, which I just think is a powerful way of looking at this. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to get through each and everything and for people to share more of their thoughts, but I hope that you'll read this. And if you have Safaria and know how to navigate it, you can read all the way through the Or HaChaim's full commentary from start to finish. I think it's important often to just look deeply into one commentator's brain and be able to say, like, where was this guy at? Right? When he looked at this verse, what was he thinking specifically? Usually we kind of see a plethora of thoughts all across centuries and geographical spaces, but this is one guy who sat down and wrote about one verse and really three words to tell us what he thought. So I thought that was a fascinating way of getting into this parsha this week.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.